Good morning. This is Talking Animals. My guest today will be Deborah Howard, founder of the Companion Animal Protection Society, which seeks to protect companion animals from cruelty in pet shops and puppy mills. We'll speak with her in a few moments. Also, as the prize for Name That Animal Tune, we'll give away a pair of tickets to the Renaissance Festival. And perhaps most important, my co-host this morning is Mike Strauss. Hi, Mike. Go ahead. No. There you go. Right there. Say hi.
Hi.
Okay, there you go. So we're kicking off the show with an animal tune of sorts. Here you go. You read that first one. Here, in the mic. There you go.
This is Belle Flake, who my dad saw perform last week playing the Bullfrog Shuffle here in Talking Animals.
All right, well done. Very good, and I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. And my guest today, Deborah Howard, who in 1992 founded the Companion Animal Protection Society, CAPS, considered the only national nonprofit organization dedicated exclusively to protecting companion animals from cruelty in pet stores and puppy mills. So with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us, although our email so far does not seem to be available, but maybe we'll change that as the show goes on. That's dj@wmnf.org if we do get that rolling. Let's welcome Deborah Howard to Talking Animals. Good morning, Deborah.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals.
I'm happy to be here.
Great. So I feel there's just so much important ground to cover here, but perhaps to sort of create a backdrop for that, maybe I could ask you to recount for probably the umpteenth time your pivotal visit to the Atlanta pet store that kind of set CAPS in motion all those years ago.
Right. I should preface that by saying that I am a proud graduate of New College of Florida.
Oh, well, there you go.
And I visit every single year for a reunion, and we also have a campaign in Sarasota, pet shop campaign.
Oh, geez. Well, this is great. This is both a local and a national interview at the same time. We love those.
And we have a very strategic billboard going up April 8th in Tampa. I can't tell you the location yet, but it's on Dale Mabry. You won't be able to miss it.
All right. Well, I'm going to try to squeeze that out of you before our time is up here, Deborah. All right.
No, we want it to be a surprise.
Okay.
Okay, anyway, in 1992, I walked into Dr. Pet Center, which was a chain of 300 stores in Perimeter Mall in Atlanta, and was just horrified by the conditions of the dogs. Many of them were visibly sick. And I picked up a Labrador Retriever with a bad cut on its leg that it was pressing against the grate of the cage.
Oh.
And I knew this was very wrong. I just didn't know where the dogs came from. And I did a little research and was just appalled when I found out the dogs come from puppy mills, commercial breeding facilities that mass produce dogs for resale to the pet shop industry, and now, unfortunately, online. And I, at the time I was doing public relations, I do have a law degree as well. I approached 2020 about doing a story, and we ended up, this was in November of 89, we ended up doing a story exposing Dr. Pet Centers in May of 1990. I also organized the first of four protests all over the United States, and then the following 3 years, Canada. The first year we did it against 30 Dr. Pet Centers around the country. Of course, they thought PETA was behind it. So subsequent to that, I generated stories in Life and People magazines, and by February of 1993, Dr. Pet Centers went bankrupt.
Wow. Victory.
Yes.
So, of course, we're going to, you know, spend more than a little time, obviously, on Companion Animal Protection Society and sort of what's been going on since then and what's going on at the moment, But I think it's kind of interesting, too, that you kind of alluded to being in public relations and having a law degree, but really the path to sort of launching CAPS was, in some respects, kind of maybe even preordained or at least reflected a bit of a genetic bent. Talk about your house growing up, which not only sounds like it was brimming with animals, but that activism seemed to be as central to your family as eating breakfast.
That's right. So my parents were both actors. My mother was very involved in political campaigns. So starting around 8 years old, I started working in political campaigns. So I do have a background in organizing. I actually was sort of an unofficial organizer for the United Farm Workers. They wanted me to do it full time, but I was still in school organizing events for them. But I worked in a number of political campaigns growing up. And then, you know, at New College, I was also an organizer as well for a political campaign. And then went to law school. And we grew up in a household with, you know, a German Shepherd. There were two different German Shepherds when I was growing up, and a lot of cats and rabbits and so forth. And both my parents were huge animal lovers. So I think the two kind of came together at the moment when I walked into the Dr. Pet Center.
Yeah, it does seem like not only one of those light bulb moments, but that you were sort of prepared in various ways for it to translate, a light bulb moment that translated into, you know, as you pointed out already, shutting that sprawling operation down in fairly short order.
Before I went last, Florida. I was a radio reporter for a year, and I was an intern first. This is WQSA, which is, I guess, QSR now.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. And then I was at another station, WBRD, WDUV, but I think WDUV is still around. It's like easy listening music.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. Wow. BRD was a country station. Yeah, out of Bradenton, but it was Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And then I went off to law school, and then I went into PR, and then I went into the pet shop.
Right. And then that all changed. So you kind of made a brief reference to it, but really, for the benefit of folks listening who just may not be all that certain about sort of the nefarious world of puppy mills, let's really start at the remedial level and have you more specifically define or explain what a puppy mill is.
Well, we define it as a commercial facility, breeding facility, that mass produces dogs for resale. So the facilities we're mostly interested in, although that's going to be changing because more and more people are selling via the internet, these are commercial breeders. These are not breeders that have a few dogs in their home. They have large commercial operations for the most part. And if you sell dogs for resale and have more than four breeding female dogs and make $500 a year, so if you're reselling to a broker who in turn sells it to a pet shop, or if you're selling directly to a pet shop, or if you're reselling to a broker who sells online, it doesn't matter. There has to be a resale element to it. You need a USDA license. So these facilities are federally licensed and inspected. Now, that doesn't mean anything because the USDA has been infamous for not doing a good job of inspecting these. And there's 4,000 to 5,000 dog brokers and breeders in this country. The number is dropping because of all the work we've been doing over the years. So we've also investigated USDA for many, many years. And that ultimately led in 2006 to us meeting with the Office of Inspector General, which is the oversight arm for well, each government agency has one, and in this particular case for USDA.
Yeah.
And they don't meet with outsiders, but they agreed to meet with us because our investigators actually document Animal Welfare Act violations. The Animal Welfare Act is the federal law that regulates these facilities. So our investigators have to know the Animal Welfare Act. And they document it in reports, and we compare our findings to those of the USDA. And oftentimes the USDA inspectors wouldn't find anything, and we'd go there a day later and find 25 violations. So fast forward to 2010, OIG, without saying anything to us, but having had a two-hour meeting with us and taken our report and listened to our recommendations and agreeing that something should be done, issued a very scathing 69-page report in which they made a number of very serious recommendations that USDA is now, 3 years later, still trying to implement. But we do meet with them. We're sort of like their watchdog agency. I think they do respect us on a certain level.
Well, it sounds like it, yeah, just by virtue of kind of going against their typical, we don't sit down with outsiders, you know.
Yeah, that's OIG. USDA does, but I think they really respect us because we're the only national organization that does this full time.
Right, right.
And we've been to more than 1,000 puppy mills, most of those USDA licensed. Now, people are going to say, why can't you shut them down? Well, these are places primarily in the Midwest, and yes, there are a lot of Amish doing it in Pennsylvania as well, and we've done a lot of work there. There's a lot of Amish breeders in Ohio, and the problem is they're in rural communities, and everybody knows everybody else, and sheriffs and prosecutors and other law enforcement are reluctant to take action against people within a small community.
Yeah.
Well, so that's the problem we have. I mean, I wish to actually get places shut down. For example, there was a case in Minnesota, Reuben Wee, horrible place. Took us two times. We went in 2002, gave all the evidence to sheriffs. They didn't do anything. Went back in 2005, even rescued this dog out of there that was bald. It was from malnutrition and stress. 10-year-old, poor little 10-year-old dog. Went back in 2005. This time they took the case, prosecuted him. They didn't even seize his dogs, but he gave them up. And the prosecutor said to me, you know, I wanted to do something in 2002, but he's in the same community as me. I sort of know of him, and he promised me he was going to retire, and I wanted to believe him. This is the attitude we're up against.
Yeah. Well, and also, too, one thing you've kind of mentioned, but, I mean, there seems like there are sort of significant geographic elements to the puppy mill problem, like clusters, I guess, of puppy mill operations in a certain part of the country. And as you alluded to, the Amish, and I think maybe to some extent, too, the Mennonite communities are major operators. So then you've got, you know, as with other practitioners of the puppy mill trade, their business is typically part of a farm, so it doesn't necessarily, well, it may or may not raise suspicions, but it certainly doesn't invite, you know, people to come by and see what they've got going back behind the barn. So is that also kind of a formidable challenge of just sort of detecting and sussing out what's going on, much less taking the kind of actions that you've already described?
USDA has a list of all their dealers. In fact, it's really nice now because there's a lot of transparency. And you can go on it's Animal Plant Health and Inspection Services, APHIS. You can go on their website, and you can see the inspection reports for the last 3 years. They're also taking photos now, and you can do a Freedom of Information Act request and get some pretty graphic photos from USDA. So we are seeing a lot more cooperation. I just met with them in January because they just, pretty soon, they will be inspecting internet breeders as well. They were exempt from the Animal Welfare Act before, and USDA made a petition for rulemaking change. I don't know how they're going to identify all these internet breeders who aren't already licensed and selling to pet shops, and one of our jobs is going to be to help them. We do get complaints online, and I highly recommend to your listeners that if they bought a sick puppy from a pet shop, that they file a complaint with us online.
With CAPS, with the companion animal.
Right, caps-web.org.
Okay, cool.
We help customers. There is a lemon law in Florida. You do have rights. If you bought a sick dog, you're entitled to your vet bills up to the price of your dog. There's not a disclosure requirement prior to sale. There should be. I mean, they should be telling people where the dogs come from. I mean, some of the states like New York and California, if you ask, they have to tell you the breeder and broker information.
Yeah. So this is Talking Animals. If you just tune in, I'm discussing puppy mills with Deborah Howard, founder of the Companion Animal Protection Society. If you'd like to ask Deborah a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663. I'd like to offer our email opportunity, but unless there's someone here at the station who can, there seems to be a glitch signing in for whatever reason to the online email account. Otherwise, normally we'd be able to suggest you could email us at dj@wmnf.org. But again, at the moment, do not have access to that. But let's take a call right now. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Deborah Howard.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. Did you have a question for Deborah or a comment?
I do. I bought a Cocker Spaniel puppy from a place in St. Petersburg, Florida, where it had official papers, and it had, you know, it listed the mother and father. And there was a track record of this puppy, and it was a great dog, loved him to death. He's now passed, but it was very sick. And when I got him, it was already recorded what they were, what he was, where he came from, but it still kind of masked the reality that it came from puppy mill. And how is that being handled in as far as these fake documentations? I don't know if they're fake or not, but it certainly was a sick puppy.
Okay, so I'm assuming if you've had the dog for a while, or it was a while ago that you bought the dog, that it was AKC registered or registerable. AKC will pretty much register anything. It's changed. We actually had a number of AKC inspectors who were our informants. We did a huge expose with 2020. We did two exposés with 2020 on Dr. Pet Center, but we did another one on AKC and also a front page article with the Philadelphia Inquirer with an ace investigative reporter. They made a lot of money from registering puppy mill litters. So a lot of people, when they buy the dog, don't end up registering it. So it looks like the dog is you know, it's really impressive. Honestly, now there's a number of puppy mill registries that were creative. AKC did crack down to a certain in certain ways that made the puppy millers not want to use them. Some of them do lose their AKC privileges, but AKC is doing very little about this puppy mill problem, and they have inspectors that go in there, and they don't report the problems that they see at the puppy mills. They are supposed to, but they don't. I mean, similar with USDA, they haven't been. Sometimes they see state, you know, things that are a violation of state law, like animal cruelty, and they don't report it. That's why your paperwork is probably real. Although I should say that these puppy mills are known for not good record keeping, and it could be that the parents of your dog are not really the parents of your dog. I mean, pretty much they just throw the dogs all in together and breed them, and there is a problem with proper record keeping. But if you have AKC paperwork, it's probably very real, but it doesn't mean anything. In fact, California has a law to that effect that they're supposed to post on the wall and hand to you that says a registry doesn't guarantee the health, the lineage, and so forth of the dog.
Okay, well, caller has left, I think, to listen to your response. But, wow, it's a tricky world, Deborah. My goodness. And you kind of mentioned this, but I was going to ask, you know, you started Companion Animal Protection Society, I guess, about 23 years ago at this point. Over that time, what has the advent of the Internet done to the whole puppy mill landscape, to the extent you could even quantify it?
Well, pet shops are going down. USDA licensed facility numbers are going down. More people are selling over the internet, which, as I explained, was not regulated or still not regulated. The other scary part is that people are buying dogs from overseas. That will soon be regulated as well. Americans will no longer be able to buy dogs that come from overseas because it will be illegal to import dogs under 6 months of age. There's a number of little teacup dogs that sell for $5,000 to $10,000. I don't know if you've ever seen a teacup dog, but they're very unhealthy. They kind of have, you know, everything is miniature, and they are coming over from Korea from a mainly one big dog broker in Korea. And these women are selling them for $5,000 to $10,000, and then they even, you know, jump on planes with them and take them to Saudi Arabia and all these places. It's a horrible industry. They have pages on Facebook and other, you know, other internet pages. So yes, it is going to be a problem, you know, this is a new frontier for us, trying to figure out who these people are that are selling online. There are a number of pages like Next Day Pets and Puppy Find and so forth that are nothing but people selling online. Now, some of these people also do sell to pet shops and have USDA licenses.
And so, you know, Deborah, that as I was thinking about this, preparing to talk to you today, I was wondering, is it, at this point, is it too sweeping to assume that a dog for sale, I mean, you know, at a pet store is from a pup? I mean, we're all, not surprising, all about adopting animals around here, of course, but
absolutely.
But if someone was intent on buying a dog for whatever reason at a pet store, I mean, what should they look for? What questions should they ask?
You just don't buy a dog online, and you do not go to a pet shop. I mean, almost all dogs in pet shops are coming from puppy mills. And you don't buy a dog without seeing the parents. And we don't recommend that anybody buy a dog or a cat while millions of animals are dying in shelters in the United States, including in Florida. So we really highly recommend you save a life. A rescue dog really knows the difference. It knows that you've done something special for it, and that they'll be very loyal and devoted to you. So that, I don't, people just stay away from the pet shops, stay
right.
away from buying a dog online. It's just, you could end up getting a healthy dog, but you're supporting these parents who live in squalor, who live in tiny cages, in substandard, inhumane conditions for their entire lives, and oftentimes they're just killed when they're no longer producing large litters. That's the industry you're supporting. You're not just buying a cute little puppy in the window, you're buying what comes with the cute puppy in the window. It's the entire industry. And that's why we don't want people supporting this industry.
Right. So it is a safe enough assumption that dog at that pet store did come from a puppy mill that you know, it's just, there's just no good version of the scenario of walking into a place like that and saying, hey, that guy looks cute.
I recently, we have a campaign against a pet shop in Sarasota that also has a location in Tampa. There's also Petland, which is the largest chain in the country that has stores in Florida. I've seen the interstate health certificates going to the stores, all the stores in Florida. So I can say that all of these places are buying, in fact, from puppy mills or from a broker who buys from puppy mills, such as the Hunt Corporation, which ships out 1,000 to 2,000 puppies a week out of Goodman, Missouri. We worked undercover there for 6 months. We have a documentary on it. We have a documentary on some of the breeders that sell to Hunt. Kathy Bach sold to pet shops in Florida. I don't know if you saw her documentary on her website. We worked there 6 weeks. She's one of the most notorious, most famous, or I should say infamous, dog breeder brokers of all time. She was doing cesarean sections and spays and neuters without anesthesia. She was ultimately convicted of cruelty based on our evidence, and finally, it took a while, lost her USDA license. It was sort of in steps. It was terminated, then she was selling still illegally, so then it was permanently revoked. But she sold to pet shops, various pet lands, mostly in Florida, and we have a documentary about that case. I mean, this woman had 900 adult dogs and 400 puppies at the time our investigator was working there with a hidden camera.
Wow. I mean, it's just, I guess, you know, like you say, it's the kind of facilities are diminishing, but the problem still, just what you describe, like locally, looms large. Are you, having done this for as long as you have, and obviously so effectively, are you encouraged at the progress, but just wishing, obviously, that it could move more swiftly? Or, I mean, what else, what could be done, people listening, in terms of helping, you know, toughen and tighten and close maybe some of the loopholes in legislation? What could people do to sort of, you know, fortify this and make this more effective in closing down these operators?
Well, there are state laws where, you know, in various Midwest states where they're trying to get tougher. Missouri is finally getting tougher with its puppy mills. They had Prop B. It was unfortunately turned over by the legislature. I don't know how they did it. But there is a task force for the Attorney General, and they are starting to shut down some puppy mills there. On a local level, we've been very involved with getting ordinances passed to ban the retail sale of pet shop puppies and kittens. And I hope the county commissioners in Sarasota are listening to your program, because we're wanting them to pass one, and we actually drafted a sample ordinance for them. There's 3 pet shops in Sarasota. We'll probably come up to Hillsborough and Pinellas County And we were also meeting with Manatee County, which seems to think it's okay to have a Petland store there, while they claim at the same time to be a no-kill community. I don't think that that really makes sense. So these ordinances, we passed a really famous one in West Hollywood, which was sort of the genesis for the ordinance movement in Glendale and Los Angeles. We provided all of the pet shop puppy mill evidence that supported the recently passed ordinance in Los Angeles, which effectively shuts down 24 pet shops unless they agree to become humane adoption centers. We also have also convinced pet shops to go humane and become just adoption centers. And so we've done a lot of that in California. We're working on an ordinance right now in San Diego. We got the first ordinance passed in Illinois. I really like to see Sarasota County become the first county in the country to pass such an ordinance.
Yeah, no, it sounds like, you know, and like you said, sometimes the contradictions and anomalies in a certain area about how they handle their pets, their dogs, you know, just on ordinance level, it's puzzling at best.
Right. But this is, you know, this is another strategy, you know, that we're using. We also hold protests, which is effective for outreach. We're not trying to shut stores down. We just want them to go humane, which means either stop selling animals or bring in animals from rescues, from shelters, for adoption. And, you know, this has been very effective in other communities. Albuquerque was the first city, although they didn't publicize it very well, that implemented this program, and it's been highly successful. The euthanasia rate in that city has gone way down.
Yeah. So this is Talking Animals. Again, I'm speaking with Deborah Howard, founder of the Companion Animal Protection Society. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, or thanks to help from people. We do now have our studio email available at dj@wmnf.org. And in fact, let me read one of those to you, Deborah, that might be interesting on a couple levels. It starts off, New College, booyah. Thanks for bringing Deborah on today. I knew her from when I was executive director of New College Alumni Association. I was wondering if Deborah is aware of the Andy's Pet Store at University Mall in Tampa, which appears to be a former doctor pet store and still seems to be buying from puppy mills.
Oh, so who would this be?
Well, I guess we didn't say not to mention. It's David Bryant.
Yes, David Bryant. Okay. Hi, David. Okay, so a pet shop, it's in the mall in Tampa?
Yeah, Andy's, I guess it looks like pet store at University Mall in Tampa.
Oh, boy, I'm not familiar with that one, so
I'm
going to look it up.
Well, there you go. You're on the case already now. Yeah. Well, see, we try to work both ways here. You tell us about your investigations. We help launch some. So,
We were also in, I don't know if you've heard of this, it's a smaller publication, but a very beautiful one, Focus on Southwest Florida. And I think it's about 3 years old. They have one in New York City. And
okay.
They did a story about our ad campaign, Models Against Pet Shops and Puppy Mills. And then the editor donated a full-page ad for us in their April issue, which I don't think is quite out yet.
Wow.
So we have this amazing ad campaign. One of these beautiful models, they're all in Dallas-Fort Worth, saw the Kathy Bach documentary, was horrified, and said, I want to help you. As a result of this, we went to Dallas-Fort Worth with our CAP spokesmodel, who is Beatrice de Bassethand. She's a puppy mill survivor and the CAP spokesmodel.
Yeah.
Went out there and another dog, Spencer, a cattle dog mix, who's our canine donation specialist.
Right.
Anyway, went out there and did a photo shoot and videos with these 8 gorgeous models, wonderful women, and a bunch of rescue dogs that I had lined up from rescues in that area. And that became Models Against Pet Shops and Puppy Mills, which is now appearing on billboards. And we're also in 700 commuter trains on Long Island Railroad and Metro North, 2 different ads right now. And as a result of that, in 1 month, more than 1,200 New Yorkers have come to our website. We are looking to do more advertising. We were also on WEDU in Tampa Bay for the entire month of February and a few days into March. With the public service announcement, 30-second version of it, and it ran every single day.
And so Deborah, let me ask what may or may not be a dopey question, but I understand sort of the genesis of the campaign. But why models? I mean, I'm not, of course, opposed to beautiful women on, you know, really on any philosophical level, but I'm not sure I immediately gleaned the connection between models and puppy mill dogs.
Well, okay, so think about the PETA campaign, I'd rather go naked than wear fur.
Right, right. That's a whole show or two worth, just with all the pros and cons of that philosophically.
Well,
but
yeah,
please
go
ahead.
Yeah, there, but yeah. What I'm saying is, it doesn't show you a skinned fox. It just shows you a naked person saying, "I'd rather go naked." It gets you interested, and it makes you go to the website to learn more. I don't want to hit people over the head with graphic images. We do enough of that. And quite honestly, the CBS Outdoor and Lamar and the companies that we're working with, we're probably going to run some Animal Planet ads in New York City with Time Warner. They wouldn't run those kind of ads. And they also give us a very generous, you know, nonprofit discount as well. So we want to get people interested. We want to engage them enough so that they just go to the website. I mean, the group ad of models, all it says is Models Against Pet Shots and Puppy Mills. It has our URL, mm-hmm. and that's it. And
yeah.
it's enough to get people to go to the website. The other one has the beautiful blonde model Keely and Beatrice and says, "This is the face of a puppy mill dog. Get the facts about the Pet Shop Puppy Mill connection."
Yeah. No, they're very cool and they're very well done. And I think I posted at least one, if not both of those, on Facebook, you know, in the days leading up to your appearance.
I know.
Yeah. No.
Good promotion there.
Well, not just that so much. I guess what I was going to say is that it was interesting, the comments that it generated. And I guess your basic thing is like, hey, if this catches people's eye,
right.
and then they go to the website, you know, job well done.
Well, and then we have the public service announcement on our models page too, and it says, "This is the face of a puppy mill dog." And then Keely and Beatrice then share Beatrice's story from a puppy mill. She's got deformed elbows. She walks with a limp. She got glaucoma at 4. She's about 99% blind now. She's 10 years old. Mm. She has a heart condition. It's stable right now. And she's had thousands and thousands of dollars in veterinary bills, hundreds of dollars of eye drops every single month, sees all kinds of specialists, goes to physical therapy every single week. She's an extremely happy dog. I mean, she makes a great, great spokesmodel.
Yeah.
Because had she been left in that puppy mill, they probably would have killed her because they didn't want her anymore.
Right.
And not
profitable, denied. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or she would have just been living there the rest of her days completely blind because they wouldn't have, you know, and arthritic and everything else. She wouldn't have gotten the treatment. She actually belongs to CAPS because she's not really she wasn't really a placeable dog. With all those conditions.
Yeah.
And she's a perfect spokesmodel for this. She loves to model, too. And she, by the way, I should add that Beatrice has a blog, glossy color business cards, and a huge social media network. She has nearly 600 connections on LinkedIn and nearly 1,700 fans on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Pinterest, you name it. She has an assistant as well.
Right, I know. Again, when I was gearing up for that, Beatrice is putting me to shame. I wish I had this much horsepower. I mean, geez.
Yeah, yeah. Our social media person is actually the one she calls her assistant. But
yeah.
Because she has such a huge social media presence, she does require, you know, a lot of, her sites require a lot of maintenance. No, Beatrice is, you know, she's a perfect dog, you know, just to spread the word here.
Yeah.
She's happy to do it. And she is the canine star of this campaign.
For sure.
I'm going to probably be in people.com. I just did a 1-hour interview yesterday.
Oh, and, great.
I don't know if it's next week or, you know, it's a weekly.
Yeah.
We kind of came full circle because I generated this story in People in 92. But people.com apparently gets 1 billion hits a month.
Oh, my God.
250 million every week.
I'm sure Beatrice is going to try to get in on that. That's
she'll be in it.
Right, of course.
Well, yeah, but you know how she's trying to get in on it? I had to tell them that I can't leave New York City until she gets into peoplepets.com.
Oh, well, there you go. A little leverage. Excellent. But very cool. So, Deborah, one of the things, too, that was interesting, you know, like I said, the comments that sort of were generated by posting, especially the pictures of the model campaign, but just a little basic blurb that I posted on the station website, which I pretty much do every week, that too generated some interesting things. I'd just like to have you maybe respond to the first comment says, "I firmly believe that the only way to put puppy mills out of business is to stop the demand. The USDA mm-hmm. and other regulatory agencies have been very ineffective in stopping the legalized cruelty that these animals suffer on a daily basis. Basis in thousands of puppy mills all across the country and around the world.
Right.
A strong, brutally honest educational campaign aimed at school children mm-hmm. would go a long way toward putting an end to this with the next generation. If children from grade school to high school are made aware of these horrors and they're shown that there are so many wonderful animals in shelters, I don't see how this can fail." What do you respond to that?
I absolutely agree with that, and we have done you know, cats are small, and we're national, but we're very small. We're not the Humane Society. We're not ASPCA. We're not Best Friends.
Yeah.
And we're not even some of these large shelters that have major revenue. But that is definitely the way to go. In fact, I tried to get some of the schools in Sarasota County interested. There's actually an animal rights group at Pineview, and they wouldn't even call us back to come out, and they didn't think protesting, you know, was acceptable as a form of outreach.
Hmm.
But in Los Angeles, where we are allowed to do protests inside shopping malls, it's a constitutional right in California, and I researched that myself, we had as many as 130 protesters protesting the Barkworks chain in Los Angeles inside a mall. And as part of that, we had an outreach program with inner city high school kids. 60 of them protested with us.
Wow.
So we do some of this. We have high school kids also in our Chicago area. We protest 4 stores in Chicago. And they join us on a regular basis every week to protest Happiness as Pets and other stores.
That's great. Well, we're sort of nearing the end of our time, Deborah, but I want to at least get one more caller in. Let's put them on there. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Deborah Howard.
Hi, I had called earlier, but I lost you because I was in a dead zone.
Oh, okay. A quick question or a comment for Deborah?
Quick question is, the AKC-sponsored dog shows where they obviously showcase champions, and these champions are taken to breed, and the leftover puppies that are not selected for the shows that are what they would consider inadequate are sold off and not told that they are the sick or leftovers. And how is your organization handling that, and what, how do you feel about the AKC-sponsored dog shows?
Well, we had briefly touched on AKC, so I'm not a fan of AKC. They fined me $2,000 for we did a wonderful expose with Dateline, and as I explained later, we've done exposés on AKC. So I'm not a fan of dog shows. I think dog shows are ridiculous. First of all, is it really for the dogs, or you know what are they doing? I just got a letter the other day from a lady who said, you know, my breed doesn't want to be part of AKC because then it makes the dog popular, then it increases the demand, then it increases the puppy mills. And so in the Dateline story, we actually bred my deceased golden retriever to a spayed puppy mill dog, and the producer then registered the offspring, which actually was one of her cats. They fell for it. That's how corrupt they are. They fell for it. They didn't do the research. She exposed them. They were furious. They fined me $2,000. It's not enforceable unless you want to get back into, you know, AKC. They fined her $1,000. They talked about it at the delegate meeting. They said we were in cahoots with them. I just think, and it's true. I mean, these dogs in the show world, it isn't as glamorous as it looks. They're traveling all over the place. A lot of them spend, you know, countless hours sitting in crates. You know, there's definitely some good breeders out there. Of course, I'm not supporting any kind of breeding while animals keep dying. And there's a lot of purebred animals at rescues. If you want a purebred animal, I mean, they have more genetic problems, obviously. But go to petfinder.com and look. You'll find, you know, or just type in whatever breed you want, and chances are there's a rescue for it. So AKC actually has, you know, contributed to this problem of dogs becoming too popular. Whatever dog happens to win Westminster that year, all of a sudden that breed is popular. You know, same thing with movies and so forth.
All right. Well, thanks, caller, and thanks, Deborah, for that answer. And I think we have just about reached the end of our time, Deborah, but we've been speaking with Deborah Howard, Companion Animal Protection Society. The website is caps-web.org, and it sounds like in the next week or two, you can also find her and the organization on people.com, and probably Beatrice will sneak into that, too, if I know Beatrice. And so, Deborah, thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals, and all your great work on behalf of trying to protect our animal friends against these kind of conditions.
We're trying to get on Ellen DeGeneres' show, too. So far, no success, but that's Beatrice's goal, is to get on Ellen. We even had women with the big banner ad standing at the gates of Warner Brothers.
Wow. All right. Yeah. Well, something tells me you're going to get there based on your track record. I'm betting on you. So, all right. Thanks again, Deborah.
Thank you very much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner.
This is Paul Varghese with a piece called Pets on Today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
Well done, sir.
I live by myself, and my cousin told me that I should get a pet to keep me company. Okay, I'm single, I'm a guy, I live in an apartment. I don't need companionship, I need cleaning, okay? I need a dog that can dust, okay? Because the way I see it, if you can teach a dog to lead the blind, you can teach a dog to vacuum. He can lead the vacuum around the living room, that's what I'm saying. I would never get a cat. Cats have no ambition. Look at all the things dogs are doing. Rescue dogs, sled dogs, seeing eye dogs, drug-sniffing dogs. You will never see a drug-sniffing cat. Never. Never. Have you seen how crazy they get off of catnip? Can you imagine cocaine? He'd be so hooked. He'd be selling everything and all his toys outside on the streets. Hey, how much for this ball of yarn? How much for this ball of yarn? I'll throw in a scratching post. If you think about it, cats are just like drug addicts. If you think about it, they sleep all day. They're gone all night. They have way more kids that they can never take care of. But I feel sorry for dogs too, because dogs have no options when it comes to drinking. You never notice that? No matter what they eat, they just get water, like they're in prison. You figure it'd be easy to know what dog likes what beverage based off the breed, right? Like a German Shepherd, Jägermeister. Spotted tea for the English Bulldog. I don't know, tequila shots for the Chihuahua. Doberman, gin, and juice. Irish Setter, all of the above, you know? Sometimes when I get bored, I go and actually buy a big bag of dog food, and whenever my drunk friends come over and pass out on the couch, and they wake up the next morning hungover, I pour some milk in it and pass it off as cereal. And that is fun. That is fun for me. Hey, I got to drive them home. I get to play with them. My cousin said I should get a Basenji. That's what I should get. It's a dog that can't bark. Okay, what's the point of that? What am I supposed to do? Okay, so if somebody tries to break into the house, how is he going to warn me? By playing charades? Sounds like... At least give him like those little throat voice boxes. Like, the, you know, the people who smoke have the woof woof something, you know? Just give him... Or better yet, give him the Stephen Hawking computer. You know, the Stephen Hawking, he can... Intruder, intruder. See you outside.
All right, that was Paul Varghese with a piece called Pets, taken from an onstage performance devoted to pets. I think it was a pet contest of some kind. Okay, so I'm Duncan Strauss. Towards the end of the show, we'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will pair tickets to the Renaissance Festival, continuing weekends, each weekend at Mosey through April 7th. We'll do that in just a few minutes here on Talking Animals.
Right now... Through, though, it's time for animal news and announcements.
All right. Excellent job, sir. That's co-host Mike Strauss, if you tune in a bit late. So just going to run down some animal news and announcements. And always tickled when I can find a story where I see a governor that at least in one instance, might seem even dopier than our own. By which I mean that... Despite opposition from animal rights activists, veterinary experts, and concerned citizens, Michigan Governor Rick Snyder approved a bill this week to allow bear cubs to interact with people in petting zoo-like settings. According to CBS Detroit, Snyder signed legislation Tuesday amending Michigan's Large Carnivore Act, dubbed the, quote, Bear Cub Petting Zoo Bill, unquote. The new measure will allow the public to interact with bears up to 90 pounds and 36 weeks old. This will include holding and feeding the cubs, as well as taking photographs with them. Yikes. Also, I'm not going to read this to you, but I am going to recommend a piece on online at The Atlantic entitled How State Ag Gag Laws Could Stop Animal Cruelty Whistleblowers. It's written by a guy named Cody Carlson, who was an undercover investigator Mercy for Animals, and anyways, just sort of tries to put in context from his standpoint and what he was able to do with his video undercover investigation, what would happen if these ag gag laws are enacted. And again, those are laws that would prevent people, at least in some of the states where this is pending, from shooting any video or otherwise documenting what kind of behavior, how the operation works behind the scenes at factory farming and related operations. So anyways, again, how state ag laws could stop animal cruelty whistleblowers by Cody Carlson online at The Atlantic. Really well done piece. Here's something with sort of a both national and local element, much like our interview, as it turned out, with Deborah Howard. It says, circus operator ordered to pay $7,500 penalty to stop violating federal law. With a Tampa Dateline, following years of complaints by PETA, Florida-based circus operator Hugo Leibel has been ordered to pay the U.S. Department of Agriculture a civil penalty of $7,500 and to cease and desist from violating the Federal Animal Welfare Act. Leibel had been facing nearly three dozen formal charges, including repeatedly chaining an elephant named Nosy so tightly that she could barely move and denying her adequate veterinary care. Leibel has an egregious history of animal neglect and abuse and previously paid $2,885 to the USDA in 2005 for similar violations, and also paid a fine in Florida for allowing a monkey to escape and run loose, reportedly for more than 5 weeks in 2009. So, occasionally, USDA and related agencies actually clamp down and force things. Just a couple things happening locally. Talked about this last week, a little bit of detail with Linda Hamilton from Animal Coalition of Tampa, but their sixth annual Spaghetti and No Balls Dinner and Silent Auction is coming up this Saturday, March 30th, from 5 to 9 p.m. at the Yuengling Brewery Beer Garden, North 30th Street in Tampa. And again, all kinds of door prizes and cool activities and eats and drinks and stuff, all raising money for AC Tampa, Animal Coalition of Tampa, which, of course, is low-cost spay neuter and other medical services. So you can find out more by going to actampa.org. Also, next week, a week from today, in fact, Speak, Students Protecting the Environment and Animals Through Knowledge, will be hosting a talk by Humane Society of the United States President Wayne Pacelli. So he'll be speaking on campus there about how he got started, ways students can become more involved and show compassion to animals. And he'll also be signing and selling, I guess, copies of his book, The Bond, or Kinship with Animals, or Call to Defend Them. We've had Wayne on the show a couple times over the years, including when he was first promoting the book. So that's going to be on at the Marshall Student Center on at 6 p.m. next Wednesday, April 3rd. And I want to let you know, Hillsborough County Animal Services at the moment has kind of a good deal. We can't tell you the price as we're prevented from doing so on the air, but for a very reasonable price for adult cats over 1 year old, you can get this kind of thing done in the special they have going where they go home spayed or neutered, vaccinated, tested, dewormed with a microchip. So you might want to check that out. And speaking of the Humane Society of Tampa Bay, their 11th annual Tuxes and Tails fundraising gala happens on Saturday, April 20th from 6 to 11 p.m. at the Tampa Marriott Waterside. And you can find out more at the humanesocietytampa.org. And I think that's it for the main impending local things. One other sort of rock star related piece of animal news. Got this actually from the Irish Sun, but rock legend Bruce Springsteen has splashed out over 1 million pounds for one of Ireland's top horses for his show jumper daughter. The Born to Run singers grabbed Lissona, a bay mare bred by former Irish Army Rider Commandant John Leadenham in Bective, County Meath. Highly rated Jessica Springsteen, 22, will ride the horse in international competitions and possibly at the next Olympics in Rio in 3 years' time. An equestrian source said the official figure will not be released, but we were talking well over U.S. $1 million. This is a massive boost to the Irish breeding industry. It's a flagship purchase, which will hopefully convince other buyers to invest here. The thing is, Jessica Springsteen is actually a very good rider, this source says. This horse could easily be a gold medal winner at the Olympics in Rio in 2016, albeit under an American flag. So, there you have that. All right, so let's get into Name That Animal Tune. You're listening to Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, here with Mike Strauss. And the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to play Name That Animal Tune. And so this is a contest giveaway. You do not need to be a WNF member to win. And there will be a prize, a pair of tickets to the Renaissance Festival continuing the next couple weekends at Mosey through April 7th. So to the first person who calls in the correct title of this animal song, at 813-239-9663. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals.
I saw a werewolf with a Chinese menu in his hand, walking through the streets of Soho in the rain. He was looking for the place called Lee Ho Fooks. Gonna get a big dish of beef chow mein.
All right, not surprisingly, every line is lit. Let's take them in the order they came. Hi, can you name that animal tune? You're on Talking Animals.
It's Werewolves of London.
All right, and I'm sure you could probably name the artist.
Warren Zevon.
That's right, the late, great Warren Zevon. What is your first name, sir?
Mike.
Mike?
Yes.
Cool, I got a Mike sitting across from me, Mike Strauss. All right, I'm going to put you on hold, Mike, and get you set up to go over to the Renaissance Festival in the last couple weekends here. Thanks for playing, congratulations.
Thanks.
Okay, folks, Mike knew, of course, Warren Zevon, Werewolves of London. Hey, I want to let you know, too, the support for WNF comes from our members and the Straz Center, presenting the Four Bitchin' Babes, Midlife Vices, a guilt-free musical review. The celebration of wine, W-H-I-N-E, Women in Song, is Thursday, April 4th at 8 p.m. More at strazcenter.org or 813-229-STAR. So, all right, well, we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals. All right, so we'll be back next Wednesday, April 3rd, when our guest will be Jack Talmont, founder of Fostering is Cool, a Tampa organization that promotes the fostering of animals with an emphasis on the animals saved from a rather grim fate by a rescue organization. I hope you'll join us for that next Wednesday. Also, visit our website, talkinganimals.net. Where we make available all information, archives, podcasts, and more, and links to our Facebook page, Twitter feed, and more. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant and Jill of all trades is Libby Busalis. My thanks to her. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening.
I'm Mike Strauss. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself.
All right. Well done, sir. My thanks to my stellar co-host, Mike Strauss. WNF for closing out today's show with an animal song. This is Patty Griffin with I Smell a Rat, taking us up to the NPR News on WNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Wachee, and beyond. Thanks for listening. Speak with you again next Wednesday at 9 a.m. on Talking Animals.
I smell a rat, baby. I smell a rat, baby. You better watch out. I smell a rat.